ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम्, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुज्जीरये। We're continuing our reading during Kartik here at Govardhan Hill on the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're taking up where we left off last night at the fifth canto, eighth chapter, entitled The Character of Maharaj, of Bharat Maharaj. And we'll begin our reading today after some introductory prayers rendered by His Holiness Kesha Bharati Maharaj from Sanatan Goswami's writings at text number 10.
This is Srimad Bhagavata Mahima Stotram, written by Srila Sanatan Goswami. It's found in the Sri Krishna Lila Stava, verses 412 to 416. And it goes like this. Sarva Shastrabdipi Yusha, Sarva Vedaika Satpala, Sarva Siddhanta Ratnaja, Sarva Lokaika Drikpada. O nectar from the ocean of all scriptures, singular fruit of all the Vedas, rich mine of the precious gems of all conclusive truths, you are the only giver of sight to all the worlds. Sarva Bhagavata Prana, Srimad Bhagavata Prabho, Kalidandodita Litya, Shri Krishna Parivartita. O life heir of all the Supreme Lord's devotees, O Master, Srimad Bhagavatam, you are the sun risen in the darkness of Kali. You are the exact image of Shri Krishna. Paramananda Pataya, Premarashacharayate, Sarvada Sarvasevyaya, Shri Krishnaya Namostume. I bow down to you, who are supremely blissful to read. Your every syllable pours down a flood of prema. You can always be served by everyone. You are Shri Krishna Himself. Madeka Bando Matsangin, Madhuro Man Mahadana, Man Nishtadagamad Bhagya, Mat Anandana Mostute. My only friend, my constant companion, my spiritual master, my great wealth, my savior, my good fortune, my source of ecstasy, I bow down to you. Asadu Saduta Dayin, Atini Chocheta Kara, Hanamun Chigada Chinmam, Prena Rit Kadayospura. O bestower of saintliness to the unsaintly, O exalter of the most fallen, please never leave me. Always appear in my heart and my voice with pure love. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, a description of the character of Maharaj Bharat, Bharat Maharaj, text 10. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. I know, he told me 10.
Okay. Oh, okay, 11.
I don't think we finished the purport to 10.
We only did the verse. That's
right. Who said that?
He's on it. That was Nandasuna.
Nando!
Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. Purport. Maya is very strong. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Talabhyate dukabhat anjitak sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way, we did read this, remember? We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in the bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of the Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this, or they forget it. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. Text 11. This is what we just didn't finish reading. Due to attachment for the deer, Maharaj Bharat lay down with it, walked with it, walked about with it, bathed with it, and even ate with it. Thus his heart became bound to the deer in affection. Text 12. When Maharaj Bharat wanted to enter the forest to collect kusha grass, flowers, wood, leaves, fruits, roots, and water, he would fear that dogs, jackals, tigers, and other ferocious animals might kill the deer. He would therefore always take the deer with him when entering the forest. Purport. How Maharaj Bharat increased his affection for the deer is described herein. Even such an exalted personality as Bharat Maharaj, who had attained loving affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, fell down from his position due to his affection for some animal. Consequently, as will be seen, he had to accept the body of a deer in his next life. Since this was the case with Bharat Maharaj, what can we say of those who are not advanced in spiritual life, but who become attached to cats and dogs? Due to their affection for their cats and dogs, they have to take the same bodily forms in the next life, unless they clearly increase their affection and love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless we increase our faith in the Supreme Lord, we shall be attracted to many other things. That is the cause of our material bondage. Text 13. When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat due to its childish behavior. Maharaj Bharat would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap or, when sleeping, on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. Purport. Maharaj Bharat left his home, wife, children, kingdom, and everything else to advance his spiritual life in the forest. But again he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? One who was serious in advancing his spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. Sometimes in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this,
there is no chance of our becoming victimized by material activities. Text 14. When Maharaj Bharat was actually worshipping the Lord or was engaged in some ritualistic ceremony, although his activities were unfinished, he would still, at intervals, get up and see where the deer was. In this way, he would look for it, and when he could see that the deer was comfortably situated, his mind and heart would be very satisfied, and he would bestow his blessings upon the deer, saying, "My dear calf, may you be happy in all respects." Purport. Because his attraction for the deer was so intense, Bharat Maharaj could not concentrate on worshipping the Lord or performing his ritualistic ceremonies. Even though he was engaged in worshipping the deity, his mind was restless due to his inordinate affection. While trying to meditate, he would simply think of the deer, wondering where it had gone. In other words, if one's mind is distracted from worship, a mere show of worship will not be of any benefit. The fact that Bharat Maharaj had to get up at intervals to look for the deer was simply a sign that he had fallen down from the spiritual platform. Text 15. If Bharat Maharaj sometimes could not see the deer, his mind would be very agitated. He would become like a miser who, having obtained some riches, had lost them and had then become very unhappy. When the deer was gone, he would be filled with anxiety and would lament due to separation. Thus, he would become illusioned and speak as follows. Purport. If a poor man loses some money or gold, he at once becomes very agitated. Similarly, the mind of Maharaj Bharat would become agitated when he did not see the deer. This is an example of how our attachment can be transferred. If our attachment is transferred to the Lord's service, we progress. Srila Rupa Goswami prayed to the Lord that he would be as naturally attracted to the Lord's service as young men and young women are naturally attracted to each other. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited such attachment to the Lord when he jumped into the ocean or cried at night in separation. However, if our attachment is diverted to material things instead of to the Lord, we will fall down from the spiritual platform.
Text number 16. Bharat Maharaj would think, "Alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now very fortunate, and my mind is like a cunning hunter." Bharat Maharaj would think, "Alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now very unfortunate." Yeah?
I thought you said fortunate earlier.
Oh, sorry. Bharat Maharaj would think, "Alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now very unfortunate, and my mind is like a cunning hunter, for it is always filled with cheating propensities and cruelty. The deer has put its faith in me, just as a good man who has a natural interest in good behavior forgets the behavior of a cunning friend and puts his faith in him. Although I have proved faithless, will this deer return and place its faith in me?" Bharat Maharaj was very noble and exalted, and therefore, when the deer was absent from him, he thought himself unworthy to give it protection. Due to his attachment for the animal, he thought that the animal was as noble and exalted as he himself. According to the logic of Atmavan Manyate Jagat, everyone thinks of others according to his own position. Therefore, Maharaj Bharata felt that the deer had left him due to his negligence, and that due to the animal's noble heart, it would again return. 17. "Alas, is it possible that I shall again see this animal protected by the Lord and fearless of tigers and other animals? Shall I again see him wandering in the garden eating soft grass?" Purport. Maharaj Bharata thought that the animal was disappointed in his protection and had left him for the protection of a demigod.
Regardless, he ardently desired to see the animal again within his ashrama, eating the soft grass and not fearing tigers and other animals. Maharaj Bharata could think only of the deer and how the animal could be protected from all kinds of inauspicious things. From the materialistic point of view, such kind thoughts may be very laudable, but from the spiritual point of view, the king was actually falling from his exalted spiritual position and unnecessarily becoming attached to an animal. Thus degrading himself, he would have to accept an animal body. 18. I do not know, but the deer might have been eaten by a wolf or a dog, or by the boars that flock together, or the tiger who travels alone. Purport, tigers never wander in the forest in flocks. Each tiger wanders alone, but forest boars keep together. Similarly, hogs, wolves, and dogs also do the same. Thus, Maharaj Bharata thought that the deer had been killed by some of the many ferocious animals within the forest. 19. Alas, when the sun rises, all auspicious things begin. Unfortunately, they have not begun for me. The sun god is the Vedas personified, but I am bereft of all Vedic principles. That sun god is now setting, yet the poor animal who trusted in me since its mother died has not returned. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita 5.52, the sun is described as the eye of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yachchakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta suramutira shesha teja yasyagnaya brahmati sambrata kala chakro govindamari purusham dhamaham bhajami. As the sun arises, one should chant the Vedic mantra beginning with the Gayatri. The sun is the symbolic representation of the eyes of the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Bharata lamented that although the sun was going to set, due to the poor animal's absence, he could not find anything auspicious. Bharat Maharaj considered himself most unfortunate, for due to the animal's absence, there was nothing auspicious for him in the presence of the sun. Text 20. That deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which are so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets, otherwise the deer would have returned by now. Purport, out of strong affection, the king accepted the small deer as if it were a prince. This is called moha. Due to his anxiety over the deer's absence, the king addressed the animal as though it were his son. Out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything.
Text 21. Alas, this small deer, while playing with me and seeing me feigning meditation with closed eyes, would circumambulate me due to anger arising from love, and it would fearfully touch me with the points of its soft horns, which felt like drops of water. Purport. Now King Bharat considers his meditation false. While engaged in meditation, he was actually thinking of his deer, and he would feel great pleasure when the animal pricked him with the points of its horns. Feigning meditation, the king would actually think of the animal, and this was but a sign of his fall down. 22. When I placed all these sacrificial ingredients in the kusha grass, the deer, when playing, would touch the grass with his teeth and thus pollute it. When I chastised the deer by pushing it away, it would immediately become fearful and sit down motionless, exactly like the son of a saintly person. Thus it would stop its play. Purport. Bharat Maharaj was constantly thinking of the activities of the deer forgetting that such meditation and diversion of attention was killing his progress in spiritual achievement. Text 23. After speaking like a madman in this way, Maharaj Bharat got up and went outside. Seeing the footprints of the deer on the ground, he praised the footprints out of love, saying, "O unfortunate Bharat, your austerities and penances are very insignificant compared to the penance and austerity undergone by this earth planet. Due to the earth's severe penances, the footprints of this deer, which are small, beautiful, most auspicious, and soft, are imprinted on the surface of this fortunate planet. This series of footprints show a person like me, who am bereaved due to loss of the deer, how the animal has passed through the forest, and how I can regain my lost wealth. By these footprints, this land has become a proper place for brahmanas who desire heavenly planets or liberation to execute sacrifices to the demigods." Purport. It is said that when a person becomes overly involved in loving affairs, he forgets himself as well as others, and he forgets how to act and how to speak. It is said that once when a man's son was blind since birth, the father, out of staunch love affection for the child, named him Padmalochan, or lotus-eyed. This is the situation arising from blind love. Bharat Maharaj gradually fell into this condition due to his material love for the deer. It is said in the Smriti Shastra, "Jasmin deshe mriga krishnas tasmin dharman vivotaha." That tract of land wherein the footprints of a black deer can be seen is to be understood as a suitable place to execute religious rituals. That's amazing. He's actually remembering scriptures and applying it to the deer. Isn't it?
He wasn't just making it up.
I don't know. It's text 24. Yeah, text 24. So he's making up what it means. But Maharaj Bharat continued to speak like a madman. Seeing above his head the dark marks on the rising moon, which resembled a deer, he said, "Can it be that the moon, who was so kind to an unhappy man, might also be kind upon my deer, knowing that it has strayed from home and has become motherless? This moon has given the deer shelter near itself just to protect it from the fearful attack of a lion." 25. After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued speaking like a crazy person. He said, "The deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness." Purport. According to Ayurvedic treatment, it is said that if one has a high fever, someone should splash him with water after gargling this water. In this way, the fever subsides. Although Bharat Maharaj was very aggrieved due to the separation of his so-called son, the deer, he thought that the moon was splashing gargled water on him from its mouth, and that this water would subdue his high fever, which was raging due to separation from the deer.
Text number 26. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, in this way Bharat Maharaj was overwhelmed by an uncontrollable desire which was manifest in the form of a deer. Due to the fruitive results of his past deeds, he fell down
from mystic yoga, austerity, and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If it were not due to his past fruit of activity, how could he have been attracted to the deer after giving up the association of his own son and family, considering them stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual life? How could he show such uncontrollable affection for a deer? This was definitely due to his past karma. The king was so engrossed in petting and maintaining the deer that he fell down from his spiritual activities. In due course of time, insurmountable death, which is compared to a venomous snake that enters the hole created by a mouse, situated itself before him. Purport, as will be seen in later verses, Bharat Maharaj, at the time of death, would be forced to accept the body of a deer due to his attraction for the deer. In this regard, a question may be raised. How can a devotee be affected by his past misconduct and vicious activities? In Brahma Sanghita 5.54, it is said, Karma ninirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. For those engaged in devotional service, bhakti bhajana, the results of past deeds are indemnified. According to this, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. The conclusion must be that Maharaj Bharat purposefully became overly addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. To immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. Although Bharat Maharaj was awarded the body of an animal, he did not forget what had previously happened due to his purposeful mistake. Although Bharat Maharaj was awarded the body of an animal, he did not forget what had previously happened due to his purposeful mistake. He was very anxious to get out of his dear body, and this indicates that his affection for devotional service was intensified, so much so that he was quickly to attain perfection in a brahmana body in the next life. It is with this conviction that we declare in our Back to Godhead magazine that devotees like the Goswamis living in Vrindavan who purposefully commit some sinful activity are born in the bodies of dogs, monkeys, and tortoises in that holy land. It is with this conviction that we declare in our Back to Godhead magazine that the devotees like the Goswamis living in Vrindavan, who purposefully commit some sinful activity, are born in the bodies of dogs, monkeys, and tortoises in that holy land. Thus they take on these lower forms for a short while, and after they give up those animal bodies, they are again promoted to the spiritual world. Such punishment is only for a short time, short period, and it is not due to past karma. It may appear to be due to past karma, but it is offered to rectify the devotee and bring him to pure devotional service. This purport answered some of the questions. Actually, it confirmed some of the things that we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
One of them was that Bharat Maharaj purposefully fell down, which was confirmed also in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, and now here again, corroborated. And it says also in the verse itself, we had talked about how also from, I had mentioned from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about the holy names and why it is that some times devotees' practice of devotional service takes longer time than others to fructify. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave the example of Bharat Maharaj and some others, saying that because some devotees have a loftier idea of what they want to attain, sometimes they take longer, sometimes several births, in order to come to that perfectional stage. So he gave that as an example here, and it's corroborated also in this in this purport. So those two things, what are the things, Shamyapras?
Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur just says the same thing. Prabhupada has drawn from his commentary this example of it's like somebody who gains wealth and loses it and then becomes anxious. This is from Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who quotes Krishna saying that to the gopis in 10:32:20. Quote, "The reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else." And the talker's purport focuses mainly on this, that it was Krishna's intervention, which only happens for those, he says, at the level of rati or pava.
That answers the question someone asked last night about how, if he was on the level of bhava. You asked. Who?
Yeah.
Who asked?
An Indian devotee from...
Oh, that was Divyananda. Then how was it he fell down? So sometimes then when a devotee is on a high, very high level of devotional service but has a short way to go, Krishna gives a special impetus, special push. Right? By arranging such a situation, the devotional service can intensify. And sometimes it looks like a step backwards. Mm-hmm. And then there's an example of some of the gopis. There were varieties of gopis who had attained Krishna's association in his lila. And some of them were held back from going to the Rasa Lila dance. And says Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur got even more purification because of the intensity they felt when they were held back, right? And I also compiled a few, although it may be a little premature, but I think it's a good segue into this, that earlier I compiled three of the reasons, the lessons, Bharat Maharaj, lessons that Prabhupada gives. These are the reasons why he fell down. These are the ones identified in the purports as distinct categories. Prabhupada lists foolishness, misplaced compassion, and willful neglect of sadhana. Those three things.
He mentions one more as well, I remember. He didn't hear the instruction, so he said his spiritual master very well.
Yeah, that he didn't consult an authority, right?
Yeah.
When one has some kind of spiritual weakness, then there's a need for taking guidance. Mm. That.
I didn't quite understand why this Nishadavartita says that when someone has a loftier goal, he will take more breath. It seems that he will be more...
He take more what?
Breath, is that what he said?
Yes. You want to... you need a little more time to work things out. Intensify your devotional service.
But it's another case that what causes us to go back is our aspirations. If our aspiration is very high...
Krishna's reciprocating your aspiration by giving you a more intensified situation.
Well, I mean, more time for it.
More time to intensify.
That's it.
And uh-huh. You know... The situations that he's put into gave him an opportunity to approve his own devotional intention. Like when he took birth as Jad Bharat, and by that time he was completely determined not to interact with anybody.
I had a reflection and questions. Is that okay?
If they're really good.
So, first I wanted to ask if doesn't Prabhupada say somewhere that also because he was alone, because he didn't have any association more or less, that was also a reason, or is that somewhere else that it said, because he was on his own, so...
I don't know, why don't you research it and find out, and if you can find it.
Well, it's part of the same answer. He did consult an authority, because there wasn't any authority around to consult. That indicates or implies that he was alone.
Is one of the main lessons of the pastime that which always remain in the association of Vaishnavas. was the cause of his fall, and no one was there to advise him.
Or now that you're spending a little too much time with the deer. And then I just wanted to appreciate this section. It's just so powerful, and it's really deep, you know, when I'm hearing this, especially Bart Maharaj, his soliloquy, his monologue about like, oh, if the deer, you know, walked on this earth, and this earth is so fortunate, and, you know, maybe the moon will, you know, give me some cooling relief from this calamitous situation. It's like such an intense soliloquy he's offering there, and it's it just reminds me of my own personal attachments, and it's very deep. And I was wondering about Maharaj Bharat did this to show an example of what you shouldn't do. I'm curious, what would it look like with this whole situation with the deer jumping over the river and the baby deer falling? I mean, what would have been the right response? To just come and pick up the deer and then take it away, or just let it drown, or like what would be the right response, and what would that look like exactly?
Start a little deer hospital. Get the tractors out there and start constructing for future deers who might fall, and start a society in the town to collect money for all the deers that might have any misfortune, deers that are born retarded.
Four or five legs.
Hare Prabhu?
You had an expression where you heard, out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on
that? Oh, well, you mean, well, I mean, one thing Prabhupada always says is that the man had a child that was blind and he named it Padmalochan. And just the whole phenomenon that the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Like, I saw a sea cow when I was at the aquarium in Monterey. Doing Sankirtan there, and I walked through the aquarium, and there was a sea cow, and I said, it's the ugliest animal I've ever seen in my life. But then I realized it had a mate, and the mate was like, you know, snuggling up and thinking of, and I was just reflecting that everybody, they become attached to a certain person or cause, or, and it's just the nature of the living entity. You become attached and then personalize it and say, you know, this is my thing. People get sports teams and they name them things and they become attached to it. They'll fight in court over the name of the team. And all these kinds of things. It's so easy to snag on the material nature. The living entity has this emotional side in it, unless it's transferred to the spiritual world. And it's just like a ludicrous thing when you see somebody from a higher perspective, when you see somebody who's attached to such a petty thing and they name it so carefully, and then it looks ludicrous. That's what I take from it.
I was thinking while those verses were going on,
how similar they were to the way an exalted devotee thinks about Krishna. You know, this may be obvious. I mean, you probably all thought the same thing, but it shows. I was thinking, oh, well, this is proof positive that that the love that of something that we have in this material world is a reflection of the love we have for Krishna. And I couldn't help but think that some of the things he was saying must have been things that he heard from scripture before, and were relating them to Krishna, and now he was transferring them back. You know, and how dangerous is that? You know, you already know all these eloquent things and eloquent ways of comparison, you know, in exalted literature, and how easy it would be to, you know, transfer it back, and how careful we have to be to keep transferring it to Krishna. And the other side of it is, unless you have some kind of understanding of those things, we won't know what to transfer to Krishna or how to transfer it to Krishna. So I was just meditating on the similarities of how, you know, the spiritual world and the material world, the thing's the same,
the activities, the thoughts, the kinds of affection, the soliloquies are the same, but just the subject matter is different. That's all. So we have to transfer those tendencies to Krishna, and then we become free.
It's a question, just how the whole story, how this everything affected the destiny of the deer? Is there something?
I thought about that too. Yeah. Because the deer has so much association, right?
Heard mantras.
Well, there you have it. I mean, just in general, we already know the answer, right? So, okay. Text number 27, is it? 25? At the time of death, the king saw that the deer was sitting at his side, by his side, exactly like his own son, and was lamenting his death. Actually, the mind of the king was absorbed in the body of the deer, and consequently, like those bereft of Krishna consciousness, he left the world, the deer, and his material body, and acquired the body of a deer. However, there was one advantage. Although he lost his human body and received the body of a deer, he did not forget the incidents of his past life. Purport, there was a difference between Bharat Maharaj's acquiring a deer body and others acquiring different bodies according to their mental condition at the time of death. After death, others forget everything that has happened in their past lives. But Bharat Maharaj did not forget. According to Bhagavad Gita, yang yang vapi smaran bhavam, tajatyante kalevaram, tang tam evaita konteya, sadatad bhava bhadi. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. After quitting his body, a person gets another body according to his mental condition at the time of death. At death, a person always thinks of that subject matter in which he has been engrossed during his life. According to this law, because Bharat Maharaj was always thinking of the deer and forgetting his worship of the Supreme Lord, he acquired the body of a deer. However, due to his having been elevated to the topmost platform of devotional service, he did not forget the incidents of his past life. This special benediction saved him from further deterioration. Due to his past activities in devotional service, he became determined to finish his devotional service even in the body of a deer. It is therefore said in this verse, mritam. Although he had died, anu, afterwards, na mritya janma nu smritir itavarat, he did not forget the incidents of his past life as others forget them. As stated in the Brahma Sanghita, karmani niradahati kintucha bhakti bhajam, it is proved herein that due to the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is never vanquished. Due to his willful neglect of devotional service, a devotee may be punished for a short time, but he again revives his devotional service and returns home back to Godhead. Willful neglect. Willful neglect.
Like in a court of law where you have like
different levels
of consciousness in your activity or punishable
different motives. Yeah, willful neglect, like aggravated manslaughter, or what are the other ones?
Premeditated
becomes a capital crime.
Seems like neglect is inherently willful. To neglect something is inherently willful.
Would seem like that, but... Good, eh? Okay. Although in the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj, due to his rigid devotional service in his past life, could understand the cause of his birth in that body. Considering his past and present life, he constantly repented his activities, speaking in the following way. Purport, this is a special concession for a devotee. Even if he attains a body that is non-human, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he advances further in devotional service, whether by remembering his past life or by natural causes. It is not easy for a common man to remember the activities of his past life, but Bharat Maharaj could remember his past activities due to his great sacrifices and engagement in devotional service. Nice. Prabhu.
It seems unfair that he got the body of a deer in one sense because...
Oh, wait. You're talking too low, so we got to pass you this. That's okay. You're a very soft-spoken person.
Yeah, that it seems unfair that he got the body of a deer after all that performance of devotional service. Naturally, he should have got a human body. It must, you know, so traumatic to be conscious in the body of a deer. It's like a major fall, or not? Naturally, we understand that we get a human body if we do some devotional service.
This is why Sanatana Goswami says that it was done purposefully to show what not to do. So even though he may have actually been eligible to a higher state, it was done by Krishna, you know, to show others that if you meditate on the body of a deer, you're going to get the body of a deer.
Even if you're a very elevated person, the whole point is a lesson given by the Lord to all other souls. That was Sanatana Goswami's point.
I agree with that, and I've been talking about this the last few days. Just my own realization is that Krishna, the laws of nature are inexorable, and even for devotees who interact with the modes of material nature even slightly, the reaction, I used the word the other day, is inordinate. And it seems highly implicating and extreme the way these things happen. You meddle or dabble in the material energy, and then you get a result that's really hard to undo. And my meditation has been lately that this is really Krishna's mercy on the devotee, because how else would I, a delinquent soul, realize the severity of the situation in the material world, unless it was that inexorable and practically impossible to undo. Daivahi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameveye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. Krishna says, you've meddled in the material world, it's impossible now to get out. It's so sticky, and you're so small because it's so powerful. And now the only recourse you have is 100% absolute surrender. There's no other way out. And actually, the devotee wants that excuse. He wants to come to that point where there's no more alternative that, okay, there's a prayaschitta, we'll take care of that, and then I can kind of keep cruising at 97%. He wants that. He wants that point where it comes and it says, like, this is it. You're cut off completely. There's nothing else. You have to do 100% surrender. So this, you know, the severity of the fall, it's either like what Maharaj said, which is borne out in scripture, that this is Bharat Maharaj showing us how to do it, but it's Krishna showing also that if you meddle with the material nature, even as a devotee, you get the result. That's what happens to you, so don't mess around. Take full advantage when you have the opportunity.
Don't mind. I was staying with Vaisheshika Prabhu in his house. I think we were working on the book or something. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was before the book. But anyway, I was sitting there and doing something, and all of a sudden he came in the room, and he said, "That's it, Maharaj. This is it. I'm putting all my chips in the game. That's it. There's nothing else." And I was watching him, just, he like, I mean, he's big enough as it is, you know, but his form seemed to expand. It's like, I thought, it, you know what I mean? It's like, it, you know, his effulgence, you know, grew, and I thought, oh my God, you know, maybe I better get in there, get a little closer and get some of that. So this is what happens, you know, and just after that, the service started coming to him like an avalanche, you know, and to this day, you know, it's coming to him faster than he can.
He hasn't dug himself out.
No. It's not like that.
Are you in there?
Everybody who's associated with him since understands exactly what I'm talking about. Isn't it? Let's hand a whole show of hands.
I don't want to take sides.
Come on.
What was it?
Oh, they don't even understand the question.
Lucky thing. We can move on now.
What are you talking about?
What did you say?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking?
You make money.
Okay. We're continuing on. Chamyaprash, where are we? 29?
We are on text 29.
In the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj began to lament, "What misfortune! I have fallen from the path of the self-realized. I gave up my real sons, wife, and home to advance in spiritual life, and I took shelter in a solitary holy place in the forest. I became self-controlled and self-realized, and I engaged constantly in devotional service, hearing, thinking, chanting, worshiping, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. I was successful in my attempt, so much so that my mind was always absorbed in devotional service. However, due to my personal foolishness, my mind again became attached, this time to a deer. Now I have obtained the body of a deer and have fallen far from my devotional practices." Purport. Due to his stringent execution of devotional service, Maharaj Bharat could remember the activities of his past life and how he was raised to the spiritual platform. Due to his foolishness, he became attached to an insignificant deer and thus fell down and had to accept the body of a deer. This is significant for every devotee. If we misuse our position and think that we are fully engaged in devotional service and can do whatever we like, we have to suffer like Bharat Maharaj and be condemned to accept the type of body that impairs our devotional service. Only the human form is able to execute devotional service. But if we voluntarily give this up for sense gratification, we certainly have to be punished. This punishment is not exactly like that endured by an ordinary materialistic person. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is punished in such a way that his eagerness to attain the lotus feet of the Lord, Vasudeva, is increased. By his intense desire, he returns home in the next lifetime. Devotional service is very completely described here. Tad anushravana manana sankirtanaradhana nusmarana biyogena. The constant hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord is recommended in Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatam tascha dridavritaha. Those who have taken to Krishna consciousness should be very careful that not a single moment is wasted and not a single moment is spent without chanting and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his activities. By his own actions and by the actions of his devotees, Krishna teaches us how to become cautious in devotional service. Through the medium of Bharat Maharaj, Krishna teaches us that we must be careful in the discharge of devotional service. If we want to keep our minds completely fixed without deviation, we must engage them in devotional service full time. As far as the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are concerned, they have sacrificed everything to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. Yet they must take a lesson from the life of Bharat Maharaj to be very cautious and to see that not a single moment is wasted in frivolous talk, sleep, or voracious eating. Eating is not prohibited, but if we eat voraciously, we shall certainly sleep more than required. Sense gratification ensues, and we may be degraded to a lower life form. In that way, our spiritual progress may be checked, at least for the time being. The best course is to take the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami, Avyartha Kalatvam. We should see that every moment of our lives is utilized for the rendering of devotional service and nothing else. This is the secure position for one wanting to return home
back to Godhead.
Jai.
Text number 30.
Beautiful.
Although Bharat Maharaj received the body of a deer, by constant repentance, he became completely detached from all material things. He did not disclose these things to anyone, but he left his mother deer in a place known as Kalanjara Mountain, where he was born. He again went to the forest of Shaligram and to the ashrama of Pulastya and Pulaha. Purport. It is significant that Maharaj Bharat, by the grace of Vasudeva, remembered his past life. He did not waste a moment. He returned to Pulaha ashrama, to the village known as Shalagrama. Association is very meaningful.
Listen to this.
Association is very meaningful. Therefore, ISKCON tries to perfect one who enters the society. The members of this society should always remember that the society is not like a free hotel. All the members should be very careful to execute their spiritual duties so that whoever comes will automatically become a devotee and will be able to return home back to Godhead in this very life. Although Bharat Maharaj acquired the body of a deer, he again left his hearth and home. In this case, the mountain, Kalanjara. No one should be captivated by his birthplace and family. One should take shelter of the association of devotees and cultivate Krishna consciousness. Text 31, last one.
The last one. Double, W5.
Daily double. Remaining in that ashrama, the great king Bharat Maharaj was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, he remained in that ashrama and ate dry leaves only. He was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the Supersoul. In this way, he waited for death in the body of a deer. Bathing in that holy place, he finally gave up that body.
You see, this is Krishna helping him, because the body of the deer, it's natural for a deer to eat just dry leaves.
It's also a short life.
Yeah, it's a short life. I mean, he gave him off a little facility here. He can remember.
It's still austere, because deer prefer green leaves.
Okay, but still.
I don't want to talk about it too much, because I'm getting attached to the deer thinking about it. I'm feeling sorry for him. It's like, I want to get him something nice, you know.
I'm just making the point that Krishna helped him, out.
He was born in that area also.
Yeah.
Little yogi deer. Purport. Holy places like Vrindavana, Hardware, Prayag, and Jagannath Puri are especially meant for the execution of devotional service. Vrindavana specifically is the most exalted and preferred holy place for Vaishnava devotees of Lord Krishna who are aspiring to return home back to Godhead, back to the Vaikuntha planets. There are many devotees in Vrindavan who regularly bathe in the Jamuna, and this cleanses all the contamination of the material world. By constantly chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposefully falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished, at least for one lifetime, like Bharat Maharaj. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, eighth chapter, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Character of Bharat Maharaj. Sadhu, sadhu. Bravo. Bravissimo. We could take our break now, just for 15 minutes. Gayatri break.
Chapter number 9, the Supreme Character of Jat Bharat. We're taking up the reading at text number 1 and 2. Keshava Bhari Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, after giving up the body of a deer, Maharaj Bharat took birth in a very pure Brahmana family. There was a Brahmana who belonged to the dynasty of Angira. He was fully qualified with brahminical qualifications. He could control his mind and senses, and he had studied the Vedic literatures and other subsidiary literatures. He was expert in giving charity, and he was always satisfied, tolerant, very gentle, learned, and non-envious. He was self-realized and engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He remained always in a trance. He had 9 equally qualified sons by his first wife, and by his second wife he begot twins, a brother and a sister, of which the male child was said to be the topmost devotee and foremost of saintly kings, Bharat Maharaj. This then is the story of the birth he took after giving up the body of a deer." Purport. Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee, but he did not attain success in one life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a devotee who does not fulfill his devotional duties in one life is given the chance to be born in a fully qualified Brahmani family or a rich Kshatriya or Vaishya family. Shuchinam Shimitam Gehe. Bharat Maharaj was the firstborn son of Maharaj Rishabha in a rich Kshatriya family. But due to his willful negligence of his spiritual duties and his excessive attachment to an insignificant deer, he was obliged to take birth as the son of a deer. However, due to his strong position as a devotee, he was gifted with the remembrance of his past life. Being repentant, he remained in a solitary forest and always thought of Krishna. Then he was given the chance to take birth in a very good Brahmana family. Text 3. Due to his being especially gifted with the Lord's mercy, Bharat Maharaj could remember the incidents of his past life. Although he received the body of a Brahmana, he was still very much afraid of his relatives and friends who were not devotees. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would fall down. Consequently, he manifested himself before the public eye as a madman, dull, blind, and deaf, so that others would not try to talk to him. In this way, he saved himself from bad association. Within, he was always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories, which save one from the bondage of fruitive action. In this way, he saved himself from the onslaught of non-devotee associates. Purport. Every living entity is bound by different activities due to association with the modes of nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Gunasangosya Sarasat Jonijan Masu. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. We get different types of bodies among 8,400,000 species according to our karma. Karmana Daivanetrena. We work under the influence of material nature contaminated by the three modes, and thus we get a certain type of body according to superior order. This is called karma bandha. To get out of this karma bandha, one must engage himself in devotional service. Then one will not be affected by the modes of material nature. Mam cha yogya vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan Brahma-bhūyāya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, one who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. To remain immune from the material qualities, one must engage himself in devotional service. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu. That is the perfection of life. When Maharaj Bharat took birth as a brahmana, he was not very interested in the duties. He was not very interested in the duties of a brahmana, but within he remained a pure Vaishnava, always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. As advised in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Majjaji Mam Namaskuru. This is the only process by which one can be saved from the danger of repeated birth and death. Text 4. The Brahmana father's mind was always filled with affection for his son, Bharat Maharaj. Therefore, he was always attached to Jad Bharat. Because Jad Bharat was unfit to enter the Grihastha ashram, he simply executed the purificatory process up to the end of the Brahmacharya ashram. Although Jad Bharat was unwilling to accept his father's instructions, the Brahmana nonetheless instructed him in how to keep clean and how to wash, thinking that the son should be taught by the father. Purport. Jad Bharat was Bharat Maharaj in the body of a Brahmana, and he outwardly conducted himself as if he were dull, deaf, dumb, and blind. Actually, he was quite alert within. He knew perfectly well of the results of fruitive activity and the result of devotional service. In the body of a Brahmana, Maharaj Bharat was completely absorbed in devotional service within. Therefore, it was not at all necessary for him to execute the regulated principles of fruitive activity. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Sonishtitasya Dharmasya Samsidir Haritoshanam. One has to satisfy Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the perfection of the regulated principles of fruitive activity. Besides that, it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Sunushtitak Pumsam Vishwaksena Kadasu Yaha Notpandayat Yari Ritim Shama Evahi Kevalam. Duties, Dharma, executed by men, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. These karmakanda activities are required as long as one has not developed Krishna consciousness. If one is developed in Krishna consciousness, there is no need to execute the prior regulative principles of karmakanda. Srila Madhavendra Puri said, O regulative principles of karmakanda, please excuse me. I cannot follow all these regulative principles, for I am fully engaged in devotional service.
Can you give a few examples of the life of somebody who would be, like in the daily examples, somebody following a karmakanda system? I don't see anybody in this room that grew up following karmakanda. But I knew a few South Indians whose parents, like Srivas Pandit. Can you, since you lived in India for so long, talk about what it's like in a family that follows karmakanda?
I just stay here in Govardhan. I don't know anything about karmakanda or anybody who follows karmakanda. I mean, Sri Krishna Maharaj, his father was very religious and followed regulative life very, very strictly.
Examples, anything? Like Srivas was telling me about everything in the house had to be in a certain order. The way the clothes are washed, there's a certain way. If you touch the cloth before it was dry, it had to be washed again.
Well, I can give you a very strong example, but it's not exactly that kind of regulative principle, but it's a way that he responded to one of his sons, his brother, who fooled around with a girl when he was like 13. You know what the punishment was?
Hot ghee, drink hot ghee?
No, he hung him by his toes.
That's karmakanda.
Yeah, and Asit, and his seat tried to come and feed him upside down. He said it was like, it terrified him. He never did it again his whole life. I may have exaggerated that a little bit. It may not have been by the toes, but it was definitely upside down.
Anyone have any more comments about the Karmakanda lifestyle? Madhva?
I have a friend who is from South India, Subhadma Gaurangaprabhu, but his family is not Karmakanda, they are Vaishnavas. But the strictness is insane. The things which I heard from him, the rules, I don't remember all the rules, but it was like every morning he's doing his Sandhya 2 hours, mantras. Yeah, and to the water, to the sun, to the earth, to the so many things, and 2 hours full package, and everything is totally regulated to the smallest detail. And his grandfather, but this is again Vaishnava story, but just going to the details, that once they attended some temple, Krishna temple for some festival, and priests, they liked somehow some. They liked the child, his grandfather, and they claimed that child, and they got it, and the parents left the child in the temple. So now they have website, and he's the leader of the temple. He's old sannyasi now, and then the sannyasi details which they follow. It's like, you know, how many mouthfuls, and you cannot touch them.
I was told this also. They have to put on the plate, has to be, first of all, same kind of plate, leaf plates.
Yeah.
And then they put, the preparations have to be in the same place on the plate every time. And if someone puts it in the wrong place, they're out. And then they have to eat, in a certain order. And if they don't eat in a certain order, then they're fallen and they're like...
Yeah. And you cannot touch...
You can't touch your hand.
Touch mouth with your hand. Yeah, and so many, it's insane. He was telling me so many things. It's like totally overloading. And obviously Karmakanda to the same extent goes, but in other direction. But externally it's same. Rules. So many, it's...
I just thought it was important at this juncture because having not grown up in any system like that, it's hard to relate when Madhavendra Puri is saying that I'm giving all these things up. Unless you've come from that kind of background, it seems like, yeah, it's no big deal. We never did it anyway.
Exactly.
But when you're actually in it, and you're brainwashed in that way, to think that everything has to be done, it's actually freaky to give it up and to go the other way. But I just thought I'd...
Well, another aspect of that is, sometimes when devotees who aren't born in that culture, when they hear that a person who's advanced to a certain level is no longer required to follow the regulated principles, they're thinking, this is sex and gambling and meat eating, but it's not that. This is the kind of regulated principles that it's talking about,
In our times today, it could be comparable, like if somebody would say,
his voice is so loud,
I renounce my American citizenship, and I hand in my passport. It's like giving up everything that seems to be valid, proper.
Papa gave up his
degree.
What was it?
His degree.
His degree, yeah.
Yeah.
Gandhi.
That was a big thing.
Japa tak Maharaj did.
If you get something better, sure, why not?
So much of it is worshipping the devas. Yeah. Everything has to be situated in order to appease the devas. But, Bhagavatam is going into this devarshi bhuta nandrinam pitrinam nakin karunayam narinichara jagan sarvamarayam sharanam sharanam. That means you're rini. That's what karma is, karma kanda. You're trying to appease the karma. You're trying to balance the karma, right? And when you become a devotee, then those things are no longer as important, or it's all assumed by the process of devotional service. You were going to say?
Yeah, that when I'm in the Middle East, I am preaching to a lot of pious Hindus, and the demigod worship, which is an essential aspect of Karmakanda.
Yeah.
is really like a major thing in the life.
Yes.
And when you start to these poems are so important for them to hear them, because for them to remove the picture or the, you know, the form of the demigod in the altar it's a big thing. It's a big surrender.
Big thing.
And for us, it's like.
Okay, with all that background, we'll finish this purport.
Go ahead.
Srila Madhavendra Puri said, O regulative principles of karmakanda, please excuse me. I cannot follow all these regulative principles, for I am fully engaged in devotional service. He expressed the desire to sit somewhere beneath a tree and continue chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Consequently, he did not execute all the regulative principles. Similarly, Haridas Thakur was born in a Mohammedan family. From the very beginning of his life, he was never trained in the Karmakanda system, but because he was always chanting the holy name of the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as Namacharya, the authority in chanting the holy name. As Jad Bharat, Bharat Maharaj was always engaged in devotional service within his mind. Since he had executed the regulated principles continuously for three lives, he was not interested in continuing to execute them, although his Brahmana father wanted him to do so. Text 5. Jad Bharat behaved before his father like a fool, despite his father's adequately instructing him in Vedic knowledge. He behaved in that way so that his father would know that he was unfit for instruction and would abandon the attempt to instruct him further. He would behave in a completely opposite way. Although instructed to wash his hands after evacuating, he would wash them before. Nonetheless, his father wanted to give him the Vedic instructions during the spring and summer, but he tried to teach him the Gayatri Mantra along with Omkara and Vyariti, but after 4 months, his father was still not successful in instructing him. Text 6.
The Brahmana father of Jad Bharat considered his son his heart and soul, and therefore he was very much attached to him. He thought it wise to educate his son properly, and being absorbed in this unsuccessful endeavor, he tried to teach his son the rules and regulations of Brahmacharya, including the execution of the Vedic vows, cleanliness, study of the Vedas, the regulative methods, service to the spiritual master, and the method of offering a fire sacrifice. He tried his best to teach his son in this way, but all his endeavors failed. In his heart, he hoped that his son would be a learned scholar, but all his attempts were unsuccessful. Like everyone, this Brahmana was attached to his home, and he had forgotten that someday he would die. Death, however, was not forgetful. At the proper time, death appeared and took him away. Purport. Those too attached to family life who forget that death comes in the future to take them away become attached and unable to finish their duty as human beings. The duty of human life is to solve all the problems of life, but instead people remain attached to family affairs and duties. Although they forget death, death will not forget them. Suddenly they will be kicked off the platform of peaceful family life. One may forget that he has to die, but death never forgets. Death comes always at the right time. The Brahmana father of Jad Bharat wanted to teach his son the process of Brahmacharya, but he was unsuccessful due to the son's unwillingness to undergo the process of Vedic advancement. Jad Bharat was simply concerned with returning home back to Godhead by executing devotional service through Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. He did not care for the Vedic instructions of his father. When one is fully interested in the service of the Lord, he does not need to follow all the regulative principles enunciated in the Vedas. Of course, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. No one can avoid them. But when one has attained the perfection of devotional service,
it is not very important to follow the Vedic principles. Lord Krishna advised Arjuna to ascend to the platform of Nistraigunya, the transcendental position above the Vedic principles. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna Nirdvanvo Nityasatvasto Niryoga Shema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna, be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the Self. 7. Thereafter, the Brahmana's younger wife, after entrusting her twin children, the boy and girl, to the elder wife, departed for Patriloka. Thereafter, the Brahmana's younger wife, after entrusting her twin children, the boy and girl, to the elder wife, departed for Patiloka, voluntarily dying with her husband. 8. After the father died, the 9 stepbrothers of Jad Bharat, who consider Jad Bharat dull and brainless, abandoned the father's attempt to give Jad Bharat a complete education. The stepbrothers of Jad Bharat were learned in the 3 Vedas, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, and Yajur Veda, which very much encourage fruit of activity. The 9 brothers were not at all spiritually enlightened in devotional service to the Lord. Consequently, they could not understand the highly exalted position of Jad Bharat. 10. Degraded men are actually no better than animals. The only difference is that animals have 4 legs and such men have only 2. These 2-legged animalistic men used to call Jad Bharat mad, dull, deaf, and dumb. They mistreated him, and Jad Bharat behaved for them like a madman who is deaf, blind, or dull. He did not protest or try to convince them that he was not so. If others wanted him to do something, he acted according to their desires. Whatever food he could acquire by begging or by wages, and whatever came of its own accord, be it a small quantity, palatable, stale, or tasteless, he would accept and eat. He never ate anything for sense gratification because he was already liberated from the bodily conception, which induces one to accept palatable or unpalatable food. He was full in the transcendental consciousness of devotional service, and therefore he was unaffected by the dualities arising from the bodily conception. Actually, his body was as strong as a bull's, and his limbs were very muscular. He didn't care for winter or summer, wind or rain, and he never covered his body at any time. He lay on the ground and never smeared oil on his body or took a bath. Because his body was dirty, his spiritual effulgence and knowledge were covered, just as the splendor of a valuable gem is covered by dirt. He only wore a dirty loincloth and his sacred thread, which was blackish. Understanding that he was born in a Brahmana family, people would call him a Brahma Bandhu and other names. Being thus insulted and neglected by materialistic people, he wandered here and there. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Deha Smriti Nahi Jar, Shankshar Bhandana Kahan Thar. One who has no desire to maintain the body, or who is not anxious to keep the body in order, and who is satisfied in any condition, must be either mad or liberated. Actually, Bharat Maharaj, in his birth as Jad Bharat, was completely liberated from material duality. He was a Paramahamsa, and therefore did not care for bodily comfort. Text 11.
Jad Bharat used to work only for food. His stepbrothers took advantage of this and engaged him in agricultural field work in exchange for some food. But actually, he did not know how to work very well in the fields. He did not know where to spread dirt, or where to make the ground level or uneven. His brothers used to give him broken rice, oil cakes, and chaff of rice, worm-eaten grains, and burned grains that had stuck to the pot. But he gladly accepted all this as if it were nectar. He did not hold any grudges and ate all this very gladly. Purport. The platform of Paramahansa is described in Bhagavad Gita. Samadukka sukham didam somritatvaya kalpate. When one is callous to all duality, the happiness and distress of this material world, one is fit for amritatva, eternal life. Bharat Maharaj was determined to finish his business in this material world, and he did not at all care for the world of duality. He was complete in Krishna consciousness and was oblivious to good and evil, happiness and distress. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Dvaite Vradhadvadra Jnana Sava Mano Dharma E Bala E Manda Sava Brahma. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations. Therefore, saying that this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. One has to understand that in the material world of duality, to think that this is good or that this is bad is simply a mental concoction. However, one should not imitate this consciousness. One should actually be situated on the spiritual platform of neutrality. Text 12. At this time, being desirous of obtaining a son, a leader of dacoits who came from his Shudra family wanted to worship the goddess Bhadrakali by offering her in sacrifice a dull man who was considered no better than an animal. Purport. Low-class men such as Shudras worship demigods like goddess Kali or Bhadrakali for the fulfillment of material desires. To this end, they sometimes kill a human being before the deity. They generally choose a person who is not very intelligent, in other words, an animal in the shape of a man. Text 13. The leader of the dacoits captured a man animal for sacrifice, but he escaped. And the leader ordered his followers to find him. They ran in different directions but could not find him. Wandering here and there in the middle of the night, covered by dense darkness, they came to a paddy field where they saw the exalted son of the Angira family, Judd Bharat, who was sitting in an elevated place, guarding the field against the attacks of deer and wild pigs. Text 14. The followers and servants of the dacoit chief considered Judd Bharat to possess qualities quite suitable for a man-animal, and they decided that he was a perfect choice for sacrifice. Their faces bright with happiness, they bound him with ropes and brought him to the temple of the goddess Kali. Purport. In some parts of India, animalistic men are still sacrificed before the goddess Kali. However, such sacrifice is only performed by Shudras and dacoits. Their business is to plunder the wealthy, and to become successful, they offer an animalistic man before the goddess Kali. It should be noted that they never sacrifice an intelligent man before the goddess. In the body of a brahmana, Bharat Maharaj appeared deaf and dumb, yet he was the most intelligent man in the world. Nonetheless, being completely surrendered under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he remained in that condition and did not protest being brought before the deity for slaughter. As we have learned from the previous verses, he was very strong and could have very easily avoided being bound with ropes. But he did not do anything. He simply depended on the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his protection. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes surrender under the Supreme Lord in this way. Malabhi bhi rakhi yo ichha tovara nitya dasa pratityuva adhikara. My Lord,
I am now surrendered unto you. I am your eternal servant. And if you like, you can kill me. Or if you like, you can protect me. In any case, I am fully surrendered unto you. Text 15. After this, all the thieves, according to their imaginative ritual for killing animalistic men, bathed Jodh Bharat, dressed him in new clothes, decorated him with ornaments befitting an animal, smeared his body with scented oils, and decorated him with tilak, sandalwood pulp, and garlands. They fed him sumptuously, and then brought him before the goddess Kali, offering her incense, lamps, garlands, parched grain, newly grown twigs, sprouts, fruits, and flowers. In this way they worshipped the deity before killing the man-animal, and they vibrated songs and prayers and played drums and bugles. Jodh Bharat was then made to sit down before the deity. Purport. In this verse the word swavidina, according to their own ritualistic principles, is very significant. According to the Vedic Shastras, everything must be done according to regulated principles. But here it is stated that the thieves and rogues devised their own process for killing an animalistic man. The Tamasic Shastras give instructions for the sacrifice of an animal like a goat or buffalo before the goddess Kali. But there is no mention of killing a man, however dull he may be. This process was manufactured by the dacoits themselves. Therefore the word swabidina is used. Even at this time, there are many sacrifices being conducted without reference to the Vedic scriptures. For instance, in Calcutta, recently a slaughterhouse was being advertised as a temple of the goddess Kali. Meat-eaters foolishly purchased meat from such shops, thinking it different from ordinary meat and taking it to be the prasad of goddess Kali. The sacrifice of a goat or a similar animal before the goddess Kali is mentioned in the Shastras just to keep people from eating slaughterhouse meat and becoming responsible for the killing of animals. The conditioned soul has a natural tendency towards sex and meat eating. Consequently, the Shastras grant them some concessions. Actually, the Shastras aim at putting an end to these abominable activities, but they impart some regulative principles so that gradually meat-eaters and sex-hunters will be rectified.
Text 16. At this time, one of the thieves, acting as the chief priest, was ready to offer the blood of Jodh Bharat, whom they imagined to be an animal man, to the goddess Kali to drink as liquor. He therefore took up a very fearsome sword, which was very sharp, and consecrating it by the mantra of Bhadrakali, raised it to kill Jodh Bharat. All the rogues and thieves who had made arrangements for the worship of the goddess Kali were now low-minded and bound to the modes of passion and ignorance. They were overpowered by the desire to become very rich. Therefore, they had the audacity to disobey the injunctions of the Vedas, so much so that they were prepared to kill Jodh Bharat, the self-realized soul born in a Brahmana family. Due to their envy, these dacoits brought him before the goddess Kali for sacrifice. Such people are always addicted to envious activities, and therefore they dared to try to kill Jodh Bharat. Jodh Bharat was the best friend of all living entities. He was no one's enemy, and he was always absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was born of a good Brahmana father, and killing him was forbidden, even though he might have been an enemy or aggressive person. In any case, there was no reason to kill Jodh Bharata, and the goddess Kali could not bear this. She could immediately understand that these sinful dacoits were about to kill a great devotee of the Lord. Suddenly, the deity's body burst asunder, and the goddess Kali personally emerged from it in a body burning with an intense and intolerable effulgence. Purport. According to the Vedic injunctions, only an aggressor can be killed. If a person comes with an intent to kill, one can immediately take action and kill in self-defense. It is also stated that one can be killed if he comes to set a fire to the house or to pollute or kidnap one's wife. Lord Ramachandra killed the entire family of Ravana because Ravana kidnapped his wife, Sita Devi. However, killing is not sanctioned in the Shastras for other purposes. The killing of animals in sacrifice to the demigods, who are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is sanctioned for those who eat meat. This is a kind of restriction for meat eating. In other words, the slaughter of animals is also restricted by certain rules and regulations in the Vedas. Considering these points, there was no reason to kill Judd Bharata, who was born in a respectable, highly exalted Brahmana family. He was a God-realized soul and a well-wisher to all living entities. The Vedas did not at all sanction the killing of Judd Bharata by rogues and thieves. Consequently, the goddess Bhadrakali emerged from the deity to give protection to the Lord's devotee. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that due to the Brahman effulgence of such a devotee as Judd Bharata, the deity was fractured. Only thieves and rogues in the modes of passion and ignorance and maddened by material opulence offer a man in sacrifice before the goddess Kali. This is not sanctioned in the Vedic instructions. Presently, there are many hundreds and thousands of slaughterhouses throughout the world that are maintained by a puffed-up population mad for material opulence. Such activities are never supported by the Bhagavata school. Intolerant of the offenses committed, the infuriated goddess Kali flashed her eyes and displayed her fierce curved teeth. Her reddish eyes glowed, and she displayed her fearsome features. She assumed a frightened body as if she were prepared to destroy the entire creation. Leaping violently from the altar, she immediately decapitated all the rogues and thieves with the very sword with which they had intended to kill Judd Bharata. She then began to drink the hot blood that flowed from the necks of the beheaded rogues and thieves as if this blood were liquor. Indeed, she drank this intoxicant with her associates, who were witches and female demons. Becoming intoxicated with this blood, they all began to sing very loudly and dance as though prepared to annihilate the entire universe. At the same time, they began to play with the heads of the rogues and thieves, tossing them about as if they were balls. Purport. It is evident from this verse that the devotees of Goddess Kali are not at all favored by her. It is Goddess Kali's work to kill and punish the demons. Goddess Kali, Durga, engages in decapitating many demons, dacoits, and other unwanted elements in society. Neglecting Krishna consciousness, foolish people try to satisfy the goddess by offering her many abominable things. But ultimately, when there is a little discrepancy in this worship, the goddess punishes the worshipper by taking his life.
I gotta tell you,
two more sentences.
Okay.
Demoniac people worship Goddess Kali to obtain some material benefit, but they are not excused of the sins performed in the name of worship. To sacrifice a man or animal before the deity is specifically forbidden.
I have a friend in Jaipur named Shamasundar Kathoria.
He's a big guy in Jaipur. He won the Exporter of the Year award 2 years in a row. Big family, big guy. And he took me one time to the Kali. What is the Kali? The name of the on the hilltop there? Huh? No, there's a hilltop temple where it used to be the center of Jaipur, and then it gradually went over to the other side. Anyway, it's a very, very famous deity of Durga. And during the 9 days, Navaratri, the 9 days of worshipping, he decided, he told me, can I take you up there? And I said, oh, okay, I'll go up and see a devotee of Krishna. And when I'm up there, And in the top of the mountain, there was this little temple room. Inside the temple, it was like all carved marble inside. Not very big, but all carved marble. And there was the priest, and there were all these big businessmen, and they had Jack Daniels, right from the bottle, pouring it into silver cups and giving it to the pujaris. And then they would go, you know, and then take it over, and they'd offer it to the deity with a mantra, and one after another. And I just said, I'm getting out of here right now, you know. And I told Shaman Sundar, I don't think so. I'm going. And then we left. But I saw with my own eyes what's going on, even in elevated, you know, families in this country, when it comes to the worship of Durga.
Where was it?
Jaipur. Which is really now
cool. It's Amber Fort. It's called Amber Fort. It's Amber Fort. And what is the name of the deity?
That's what Duty Free Shop is so big.
Huh?
Duty Free.
Yeah, right. Jack Daniels.
Yeah?
This is bringing me some memories, because I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to tell me this story all the time about Jud Barrett. And so then, when we were kids, one of us would pretend to be Jud Barrett, and then some of us would pretend to be dacoits. We'd steal Jud Barrett and we put him on a bed, and then somebody would pretend to be Kali, they'd hide behind the curtain, and then all the rest of the kids would jump around the guy pretending to be Jud Barrett, and they're like, Kali Ma! Kali Ma! And then eventually, the person playing Kali would jump out and like chase them, and it was like tag.
This is the, you know, when you grow up in Krishna consciousness, this is your, you remember all the pastimes. That's a really nice memory.
Very
nice.
Very fun for the whole family.
Text 19. When an envious person commits an offense before a great personality, he is always punished in the way mentioned above. 20. Sugadeva Goswami then said to Maharaj Parikshit, O Vishnu Datta, those who already know that the soul is separate from the body, who are liberated from the invincible knot in the heart, who are always engaged in welfare activities for all living entities, and who never contemplate harming anyone, are always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who carries his disc, the Sudarshana Chakra, and acts as supreme time to kill the demons and protect his devotees. The devotees always take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, at all times, even if threatened by decapitation, they remain unagitated. For them, this is not at all wonderful.
I'm sorry, it says that somebody said it sounds like you're in helium. You're on helium. And it says strange adjustment in the sound.
Check this guy's watching. Helium in there?
Well, I didn't do anything different. Purport. These are some of the great qualities of a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, a devotee is firmly convinced of his spiritual identity. He never identifies with the body. He is firmly convinced that the spirit soul is different from the body. Consequently, he fears nothing, even though his life may be threatened. He is not at all afraid. He does not even treat an enemy like an enemy. Such are the qualifications of devotees. Devotees are always fully dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord is always eager to give them all protection in all circumstances. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, ninth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Supreme Character of Jud Bharat. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu.
Somebody said it happened when the microphone was moved.
Well, maybe we'll move it back.
Can I have lessons?
Yes.
He said that he didn't do anything to protect himself. So, but, you know, we hear that, you know, that could be taking us complacency. So now, by reading this purport, we see that what he actually did was internally, he really took shelter of Krishna. That was his effort to become free from the situation. Like he's, you know, he took shelter of the Lord and he was fearless and he applied his faith. Was that his, you know, effort to get out of that situation?
He was always doing that, it says in the text. The text says he was always doing that, so therefore it was no different from him to him than anything else.
Mm-hmm. But will not be the right thing when we are in a situation of, in a dangerous situation, to act, to react. He didn't react yet. He was like a dolman. Right?
You can't imitate.
Well, not only can you not imitate, but you know, if you're in a situation where the devotional service of the Lord is being endangered, or another devotee is being endangered, this is his neutrality, you know, in regards to something coming against him. But if a devotee sees that, you know, devotees are being attacked, or the deity is being attacked, then they must act. They can't just sit there and pretend to be neutral.
The body is mentioned in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Vasudeva when Devaki, when he's protecting Devaki, and he's working on a certain principle, which is that it's the duty of a living entity who's been given a body as a gift by material nature to at all costs protect it and keep it from death with every means possible, because it's the means that we have to attain self-realization. So you have to take all measures. You can't artificially imitate Jad Bharat and say, you know, it doesn't matter. I'll just, you know, do whatever. Because he's on a different platform and has a different mission in life. So you have to protect yourself. But because it's not your body, it's a gift.
Sadhu.
As much as you have to take care of
sadhu.
Or anything else.
Sadhu.
So they have four.
Pramana.
Because he was in that consciousness.
Pramana. Yes.
Because he was in that consciousness which is describing his purpose. He didn't have to direct his body. And he's in this kind of elevated Paramahansa stage.
Yes, that's what the text says. The Krishna fully protects such a person. In fact, to the degree that one takes shelter of Krishna, to that degree, Krishna's protecting. That comes out in the verse, Ananyaschintayantamam ye janapari pashate tesham nityabhyutanam yogakshemam mahamyahanam. Mahamyahanam means personally takes care of. And there, that verse and commentary indicates that to those who are fully dependent on Krishna, they have no other means of protection. They've given up every other means, and we read also that they're too busy serving Krishna to take care of themselves. And Krishna comes in and personally takes care of them.
You remember that story I told you about when Vaish came into my room and said,
that's it, I'm putting it.
Where's my
Pramana.
Well, I'd like to ask you a question. When was the last time you asked anybody for anything for yourself?
In the last few minutes.
No.
Let's get Pramana from our pundit over here. Go ahead.
You just neglected me.
So, one piece of Pramana is that Srila Prabhupada elaborates in Mantais, I don't remember where, but I could find it if I needed to, that the injunction that, you know, if you hear somebody blaspheming devotees or Vishnu, you should kill them or kill yourself or leave. And he said, but devotees can't kill themselves because that would be Brahminicide.
Yeah, it's coming here. It's coming.
Is it here?
The Brahmanas, the injunction is you should kill yourself. So the Brahmanas cannot do it.
Right. This is a Brahminicide.
Yeah, and then Vaishyas and Shudras, they should do it, and Kshatriyas should kill their lesser.
Right, so then there's a context. Also, of course, Sanatana Goswami was mildly chastised by Mahaprabhu that, you know, what are you doing? You can't, you, what is the quality of somebody who gives their body away and then tries to take it back? It doesn't belong to you anymore. So then...
Pranam. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham. I didn't mean to embarrass him and myself by that example. But I don't know of anybody that's in our position that asks anything for ourselves. And yet, here we are, and then we'll go to the next place, and then we'll go to the next place, and we'll have this, and we'll have that, all for devotional service. And we're not asking anybody for these things. They're just coming. That's the truth. We have witnesses. That's the point I was trying to make. And it really is practical. It's practical. You know, I haven't had a job for 50 years. When was the last time you had a job? And earned, I'm talking about earned income. You know, zip. You know, and yet everything that we need and that for our service is there. Like mystical, magical. I got a broken arm, went into a hospital, $60,000 bill, boom, it was taken over by somebody from the hospital, gave it in charity. It was amazing. It's practical. It's real. It's real. It's not just in the air of philosophy. And you can see in hundreds of devotees this is going on, not just one or two. Okay.
People would only understand this simple point about the more we depend on the Lord, the more everything is provided.
Okay, we've reached chapter 10, the discussion between Judd Bharat and Maharaj Rahugana. Text 1.
Swami continued, "My dear King, after this, King Rahugana, ruler of the states known as Sindhu and Sarvira, was going to Kapilashram. When the king's chief palanquin carriers reached the banks of the river Ikshumati, they needed another carrier. Therefore, they began searching for someone, and by chance, they came upon Judd Bharat. They considered the fact that Judd Bharat was very young and strong and had firm limbs. Like cows and asses, he was quite fit to carry loads. Thinking in this way, although the great soul Judd Bharat was unfit for such work, they nonetheless unhesitatingly forced him to carry the palanquin." Text 2. The palanquin, however, was very erratically carried by Judd Bharat, due to his sense of nonviolence. As he stepped forward, he checked before him every 3 feet to see whether he was about to step on ants. Consequently, he could not keep pace with the other carriers. Due to this, the palanquin was shaking, and King Rahugana immediately asked the carriers, "Why are you carrying this palanquin unevenly? Better carry it properly." Purport. Although Judd Bharat was forced to carry the palanquin, he did not give up his sympathetic feelings toward the poor ant passing on the road. A devotee of the Lord does not forget his devotional service and other favorable activities, even when he is in a most distressful condition. Judd Bharat was a qualified brahmana, highly elevated in spiritual knowledge, yet he was forced to carry the palanquin. He did not mind this, but while walking on the road, he could not forget his duty to avoid killing even an ant. A Vaishnava is never envious or unnecessarily violent. There were many ants on the path, but Judd Bharat took care by looking ahead 3 feet. When the ants were no longer in his way, he would place his foot on the ground. A Vaishnava is always very kind at heart to all living entities. In his Sankhya Yoga, Lord Kapiladeva explains, "Suridak sarvadehinam." Living entities assume different bodily forms. Those who are not Vaishnavas consider only human society worthy of their sympathy. But Krishna claims to be the supreme father of all life forms. Consequently, the Vaishnava takes care not to annihilate untimely or unnecessarily any life form. All living entities have to fulfill a certain duration of being encaged in a particular type of material body. they have to finish that. They have to finish the duration allotted a particular body before being promoted or evolved to another body. Killing an animal or any other living being simply places an impediment in the way of his completing his term of imprisonment in a certain body. One should therefore not kill bodies for one's sense gratification, for this will implicate one in sinful activity. Text 3.
Question. So, when we have different
situations, like here in India it's mosquitoes or ants, in the West it may be pests, and there's different strategies one can take. So sometimes devotee may just ask the animal to leave, and if they don't, then he may have to take action. Then there's the preemptive strike, where you go after them, like you put up all these, you know, mosquito oils, which are wiping them out. So how much should we be tolerant, and how much should we take action towards potentially harmful animals?
I know my strategy towards snails. They used to come and attack my garden that I had for Gorni Thai. I grow flowers for the deities and vegetables, and I go out in the middle of the night with a box and a flashlight, and I collect them all up, because that's when they come out, after everyone else goes to sleep. They're nocturnal and they eat everything. So I put them all in a box, and the next morning I drive them down to the park, and I open the box and I tell them, you go for it, all you can eat, free food. And I did that all throughout the summertime, and after about one season, I had no more snail problem, and they were all gone.
You did it every night?
Not every night, but like every couple weeks, you know, when I'd see they'd start coming back again, you know, there's generations of them come back.
We deported 6 mice from Bhadri Kashram, Oakmont, South San Francisco place.
You revoked their visa.
Yes, they got exported to downtown San Francisco, where there's plenty of rats and mice.
But mosquitoes, you got to be really proactive, because it can kill you. Anytime, you got to really protect yourself and not get sentimental, because
especially around here, they breed in lot of
it's the main cause of death in the world. Yes. Is mosquito bite, more than getting eaten by a lion,
more
which is
cigarettes.
Down on the very bottom.
Yeah.
More than cigarettes or anything else. Yeah. So, you know, you have to.
If you kill them in self-defense, is it not their meant to die at that point, these creatures?
Like in Prabhupada told Tamal, he said, if they attack you.
Yeah. So no preemptive strikes.
Well, you should be preemptive with mosquitoes. It means make sure you keep the door closed. Mm. Create an environment that they're not very appreciative of, so they won't come in. And, you know, always wear, you know, some kind of scent that they don't like.
Or else go after them.
You know, I mean, just, you know, keep them away, because they're not our friends. I mean, they don't know that they're not our friends, but we're not compatible association with them, so you can't be sentimental. Vidyavinaya Sampane doesn't mean that the sadhu goes over and pets a tiger or something like that.
Mm-hmm. They don't like incense.
Smoke. It's only the females that smoke. Well, they want to breathe.
I can't tell the difference, though.
Yeah.
They don't respect that.
They don't like it.
They don't respect.
Okay, we got 2 more verses.
One question on the topic.
Question on the topic.
Is it okay to euthanize old animals if they are in pain and suffering?
No.
No.
Say it again. What was the
point? Can't play God. Is it okay to euthanize old animals
if they are in pain and suffering?
No. It's their karma, and it's not our job to play God and then decide that we're going to kill a particular living entity. But what you can do is put them in the most advantageous situation to hear the holy names and go back to Godhead. If they're under your care, that's the process. But not that you decide, okay, that's the end now. Krishna decides that.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Okay, text 3, chapter 10. When the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. Purport. According to political science, a king sometimes tries to pacify his subordinates, sometimes chastises them, and sometimes divides them, and sometimes rewards them. Divides them.
Oh.
Divide
those. Huh?
Divide.
Divide.
Anyway, it's an error.
Yeah. They say deride them there?
Yeah.
Just see. Because they just see. But we don't want to change. But we don't want to change the books, you know, because... Divides. It's in the Shastra. This is the way of king, you know. Yeah. The bearers of the palanquin could understand that the king was angry and that he would chastise them. Text 4. O Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man, who has been recently engaged to work with us, cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Purport. The other palanquin carriers were Shudras, whereas Jadbara was not only a high caste Brahmana, but also a great devotee. Shudras do not sympathize with other living beings. But a Vaishnava cannot act like a Shudra. Whenever a Shudra and a Brahmana Vaishnava are combined, there will certainly be imbalance in the execution of duties. The Shudras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground, but Jad Bharat could not act like a Shudra, and therefore difficulty arose. Text 5. King Rahugana could understand the speeches given by the carriers, who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry, although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced. His anger arose due to his inborn nature as a king. Actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jad Bharat, whose Brahman effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. Purport. The distinction between Rajaguna and Sattvaguna is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion, and therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Jad Bharat, despite all kinds of injustice endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, his Brahma Teja, his Brahman effulgence, was indistinctly visible in his person.
And thus ends this morning's reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll take it up again at 3:30 p.m. India Standard Time. We invite you all to please come back and join us. Thank you very, very much. Gaur Premanande Nittai Gaura Haribol 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 Nittai Gaura Haribol Nittai Gaura Haribol 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 Nittai Gaura Panchakalpavrishcha kripasanabhevacha patitanam pavanabhyam vaishnavebhyo namo namah.
Pentacle Devotion Rinniki Jaya. Thank you to everyone who's joined us online today. We feel your presence. And we look forward to having you back later. Thank you. Hare
Krishna. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Hey! Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman. Nachari Armarman.